Another important concession was the reunion under the Roman Church in 1274 at the Council of Lyon, where Michael VIII actually embraced the Latin faith, the Catholic faith. Empress, starting with Michael VIII, could no longer play the very clever diplomatic game. I always said it was dangerous with Alexis I, but opening up negotiations with Rome, we'll bring the churches back in reunion, we'll make some sort of effort to heal the schism of 1054. Now the Pope wanted some substantial concessions. That meant conversion. That meant efforts to bring the clergy around. That meant announcements of active union, also accepting the claims of the papacy going back really to the third century and earlier, that papal primacy was supreme. Constantinople was a lesser patriarchate. And that was a price that became increasingly difficult to pay. Michael's son, Andronicus II, who was a Orthodox, devoted, pious Orthodox ruler, he found this so distasteful. And as I mentioned in an earlier lecture, these efforts to win papal support, if nothing else, just so they wouldn't preach crusades against Constantinople, that is, give crusading privileges to guys like Charles of Anjou, these concessions became increasingly difficult for Byzantine emperors to make, because the memory of that Latin rule in Constantinople, the appointment of Venetian clerics, the enforced union, ran so deep in the Orthodox clergy and made that political concession and negotiations almost impossible. And so by the time of the death of Michael VIII, the imperial government is now in a very, very difficult diplomatic game. The only way it could sustain itself would be to get Western military aid. The only way to do that would be to admit papal supremacy, and in so doing, they would now alienate ever more and more of their Orthodox subjects. So the situation is hopeless. Third, Asia Minor was sacrificed. And this became evident very quickly after 1261. Michael didn't trust the military formations, the so-called Akritai in Asia Minor. Most of these regional forces were disbanded or they were transferred to Europe. And the Seljuk Turks, or not even the Seljuk Turks, it was really the independent operators, including the Ottoman Turks, began to act up on the frontiers, and there was no military force. And as a result, Asia Minor quickly fell. Within really 20 years from the death of Michael VIII, Asia Minor is lost. Andronicus hires that fateful expedition of Catalan mercenaries, Spanish mercenaries, who attempt to reconquer Asia Minor. They can't be paid. And so what do? They attack the imperial government, besiege Constantinople, and then end up ransacking and ravaging all the way through Greece. And this is a result of making the fateful decision of sacrificing Asia Minor, for Constantinople, not going with the compact state. And again, it's Andronicus who pays the bills. In trying to buy a mercenary army to take back Asia Minor, he bankrupts the imperial government, and that gets us to our first point, fourth and last point, that is, the imperial government just doesn't have the means to run anything. The currency is debased. By Andronicus II's reign, Byzantine currency is nothing more than a local currency tied to the Venetian dugat and the Venetian grosso, which is the gold and silver coin. It has essentially fallen into the monetary and financial orbit of the Republic of St. Mark. I mean, the roles are reversed. And I think that's one of the most fitting testimonies to what happened to imperial power. That is, instead of imitating Byzantine coins, which is what the Venetians used to do, it's now the Byzantines imitating Venetian coins. I mean, their currency is essentially nothing more than a slight adjunct to the Venetian monetary market. Well, this meant that the real successors, the people who would profit from this the most, would be the Seljuk Turks. And that gets us to the next lecture, which deals with other implications of the Fourth Crusade, and that is, how did the Fourth Crusade have an important impact on the Islamic world? It never got to Jerusalem. It led us to this rather unfortunate history between Byzantines and Crusaders in the Aegean world, and as a result, new axes of Islamic power began to center in Asia Minor and in Egypt, and these new Islamic powers would eventually become the basis of the great Ottoman Empire, and that's the next element in the story. How did the Seljuk Turks, how did the Ayyubid sultans profit in the early 13th century from the events issuing from the Fourth Crusade?